Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor when she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through, and keeping their delicate skin happy and healthy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick, goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable as the diaper rash itself. Use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel good about making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra premium formula for moms who will not settle when it comes to their little ones. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with simple, quality ingredients, no artificial dyes or preservatives, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Head to Amazon.com or Walmart.com to grab Dr. Mom Butt Balm because nothing comes between you and your baby, especially not diaper rash.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is a delightful birth story episode from a fellow physician. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a board-certified OBGYN who's been in practice for nearly 15 years. I've had the privilege of helping over 1,000 babies into this world, and I'm here to help you be calm, confident, and empowered to have a beautiful pregnancy and birth. Quick note, this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 195. As always, I'm so glad that you are with me today, whether you are a new listener or you have been on me with this journey for a while. In today's episode of the podcast, we have Dr. Claudia Thomas. Claudia is an orthopedic sports surgeon, and her orthopedics training has taken her to many places, Chicago, Seattle, Pittsburgh, where right now she is stationed with the Air Force in Anchorage, Alaska. She and her husband, Chris, welcomed their first baby boy in June of 2022. His name is Stellan, and now he joins their two cats and one dog in their adventures around Alaska. Claudia joins us to share her birth story, including how they tried to get pregnant for 12 months and then got pregnant without any treatment right after visiting an infertility specialist, how she really enjoyed her prenatal care that involved midwives and physicians, including a set of twin OB male doctors. How rare is that? We talk about her lengthy induction that lasted 52 hours but ended very well, and then some of the challenges that she had postpartum and how she was greatly helped by pelvic physical therapy. You're going to love this episode for sure. Now, Claudia is also a member of the birth preparation course. It is part of what she used to get ready for her birth. I would love to have you inside the birth preparation course. If you don't know, the birth preparation course is my signature online childbirth education class that will get you calm, confident, and empowered to have the beautiful birth you deserve. You can check out all the details of the birth preparation course and come join me at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. All right, let's get into the conversation with Dr. Claudia Thomas. Well, thank you so much, Claudia, Dr. Thomas, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm so excited to have you share your story.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and your family?
Okay. Well, I am currently living in Anchorage, Alaska, but we got here by way of Pittsburgh and Seattle and Chicago. So I'm originally from Northern California, the Bay Area. And then I went to medical school in Chicago at the University of Illinois. And that's where I met my husband, who was also in school for education. So he's a teacher.
Mm, okay.
And so it makes him makes it easy for him to travel around for work as well.
Gotcha.
So then we moved to Seattle for my orthopedic surgery residency at the University of Washington, which was 5 years, and then to Pittsburgh for a year for my sports medicine fellowship, and then up to Alaska. Since I am in the Air Force, they paid for my medical school. So we'll be here probably for 6 years. We've been here 2.5 so far. Then we had our first son, Stellan, in June. So he's now 5 months old. And so it's the three of us and our dog and our two cats.
Love it, love it. So how do you like Alaska?
It's awesome. It's really cool. It's we chose it because we liked Seattle and the Pacific Northwest so much. Uh-huh. And so it's a lot like Washington on steroids.
Okay.
In terms of just, you know, weather and outdoor activities. And so, you know, we're into winter now. There's snow on the ground, and, you know, we had snow in early October.
Okay.
But yeah, it's awesome.
Are there really days like where it's dark most of the day? Like,
yeah, I mean, in Anchorage, luckily, we're kind of halfway through the latitude of the state.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, our longest days are getting on 14 to 15 hours. And then the shortest days are about 6 hours of daylight. But the sun does come up, and it's, so sunrise today was, I think, 9:30, and sunset will be about 4.
Okay. All right. Well, we didn't come to talk about Alaska, but I was just curious.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be talking about your birth. So I wanted to start off with the fact that you are a physician. So, but when you went into your pregnancy, what were kind of like your expectations of pregnancy and birth based on your medical training and experience?
Yeah. And so, I mean, it had been many years, right? It was my third year rotation, pretty much, was mm-hmm. my last experience with OB. And so I fully expected to have a hospital birth and have kind of all the things that go along with that in terms of the prenatal care. And that's what I was familiar with. And also being in the military, that's what is provided. So I expected that. And other than that, I honestly, a lot of the details of prenatal care and of birth, I had just forgotten from med school. Uh-huh,
of course, so, yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely went into it kind of with the, you know, enough medical knowledge to be able to scare myself about certain mm-hmm. things, but not enough to be able to talk myself out of those anxieties.
Gotcha. So what made you then, well, we'll get to what the things you did to prepare. Let's start off with what your pregnancy and your prenatal care was like. I know that you're active duty military, so that was different. You were also considered advanced maternal age, so maybe that was colored your care. So what was your pregnancy and prenatal care like?
Yeah, and we had also just started an infertility workup. So my husband and I had been technically trying without, you know, my birth control mm-hmm. for about a year.
Okay.
And so we had gone to see an infertility specialist off base.
Mm-hmm.
And we had literally just started labs, hadn't started any treatment.
Right.
And then, you know, a couple weeks after that, found out we were pregnant. So we joked that there was something in the air in his office that that helped us. But so we had technically started that treatment or that workup.
That's stressful.
Yeah, and it was, especially, yeah, I mean, because the labs that I had so far had come back normal, and so we had started adventuring kind of deeper down that path.
Mm-hmm.
We felt lucky mm-hmm. that, you know, we didn't have to go any further into right. that workup. But
right. Did you feel like, you know, when you're a physician, maybe, and especially an orthopedic surgeon, which is a highly competitive field, you know, attracts the best of the best. Did you feel like any sense of failure or up, like, because you weren't getting pregnant?
That's a good question. You know, I would say not yet.
Okay.
Because again, because it had only been a year, which can feel like a long time, but because we weren't really stressing about the timeline of it yet, no, I'd say
I didn't feel that. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I was a nutcase after 6 months of not getting pregnant. Like, so, yeah. Like, I was like, I don't want to see a pregnant person. And just, I'm embarrassed to say that 6 months I was in that case, but I was. But at any rate, so you had just started the infertility, found out you were pregnant, and then what happened from there?
Yeah. So, the prenatal care on at base for us is awesome. I loved our clinic. Mm. They have a model with midwives and MDs, as well as some nurse practitioners. And they definitely encourage you to see everyone.
Okay.
Or they don't make a point to schedule every one of your prenatal visits with the same person.
Sure.
I could have chosen to, you know, to schedule with a particular person each time, but I kind of like the idea of meeting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So my first visit was with a midwife. Then a couple visits were with some of the MDs. And yeah, overall, I'd say the prenatal care was really great.
Okay.
And you know, you can definitely hear things about the military, you know, pluses and minuses of military medicine. But I think overall, I was very almost pleasantly surprised with how great the care was. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you noticed a difference between the midwives and the physicians?
You know, I actually wouldn't say that I did.
Okay.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, time spent, questions answered, things focused on, they were actually pretty similar.
That's good.
And I ended up, because I was advanced maternal age, I had some of my ultrasounds and things off base.
Okay.
So my 20-week anatomy scan, because I guess they needed the level 3 scan.
More detail, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I went off base for that. And then when I started, I again started ultrasounds, I guess every 4 weeks after 28 weeks. Did some of those off base as well.
Okay. So they didn't have, having maternal fetal medicine specialist isn't really common in the military. I don't know.
Yeah. There probably are some who have done fellowships and are some of the bigger military centers.
But right.
Yeah, we certainly don't have them.
Gotcha.
But yeah. So for that 20 week, I had the scan and then met with a MFM.
Okay. So then what did you do to prepare for your birth?
Yeah. So I started listening to your podcast and I will admit I focused more so on the interviews kind of with specialists early on, because I didn't think that the birth stories would necessarily apply to me or that I wouldn't find them interesting. But those were really my favorites, actually.
Everybody says that.
Because you can find something in common with everyone,
right?
And you learn something from every single story,
right?
Yeah. So I definitely went back and listened to those sort of in a binge listen style. But yeah, so I listened to your podcast, and we also did your prenatal course.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I hope you found it helpful.
We did, and my husband actually he loved it. He's the kind of guy who, you know, you have to drag him into things like prenatal courses or birth courses, grumbling, but he found it really interesting, and yeah, definitely found it helpful.
Good.
And then I read a couple books. I did get What to Expect When You're Expecting, which is just got a lot of info, and it's great. It can definitely, I think, be a little dated at times, or a little black and white, but it does have a lot of information. And then I read Expecting Better by Emily Oster, which I know a lot of other ladies have mentioned as well.
Yeah.
And I'm actually reading Crib Sheet right now, which is the book about infancy and toddlerhood.
Right.
And then I had a book called Pregnancy, Childbirth, and the Newborn.
Okay.
The Complete Guide, which it was good. It was kind of like What to Expect When You're Expecting, but a little more about, they spent more time on kind of the labor and childbirth process and some of the techniques for pain control and
gotcha
and things like that.
Gotcha.
It was a little more focused, I think, on either home births or like midwife center births.
Okay.
So some of it didn't apply so much to my situation, but it was still
right.
Good techniques.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. How did you come to Emily Oster's book? I've had a lot of, sometimes I hear physicians in particular like push back against her because.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, because
that's
she.
That's interesting.
Well, she says some things in there like, oh, it's okay to have a few drinks or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so, okay to eat deli meat. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I've read the book. I think it's great. I think it's very, you know, balanced and everything. So, it sounds like you didn't know that there was some sort of controversy. But yeah, some OBGYNs in our field.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I could see physicians so liking it just because it is very data driven and lets you make your own decisions, mm-hmm. you know, whereas the what to expect is a lot more, you know, do this, don't do this, you know, never do that.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it's just OBGYNs who have the problem with the book and not necessarily like,
And then I can see in the same vein, like sleep, you know, trained specialists or lactation consultants having issues with crib sheet, which is more about the infant.
Yeah. I haven't read that one. So, okay. So what are some things that you wanted for your birth?
So, at first, I thought I am going to be the epidural lady. The second I hit the door, I want an epidural.
Right.
I know myself. You know, I know some of the risks. And I'm definitely going to do an epidural. And then the more I listened to other ladies' birth stories and read a little more, I thought, okay, maybe I could try at least to start labor without it.
Right.
But then, especially as it became clear that I was going to be induced, then I kind of went back to... I do want an epidural. Okay. So that was one of the things I knew I wanted to do.
Okay.
Other than that, a lot of the things you mentioned in your, birth preparation course that I think are gold standard, but I just wanted to be sure that the military hospital was going to do them. So delayed cord clamping, immediate skin to skin.
Yep.
Those were kind of the main ones. And then, I really wanted to try to have a vaginal birth. As we talk more, I guess, about the actual birth process, there was definitely a time where that might not be possible.
Right.
I appreciated the team allowing me to continue with that.
Yeah.
That desire. But
okay.
But yeah, so overall, I'd say I did make a list, or a birth wishes list. I fought back against it at first of, you know, not wanting to do it, but. But then one of the MDs actually at one of my prenatal visits asked me if I had made a birth wishes list.
Oh.
It was actually one of the male MDs. And I was like, wow, okay.
Okay. Way
to, birth stereotypes. I liked it. So I went home and made one.
Okay. Well, cool. Yeah. I mean, we really should, because it really should be a conversation. A lot of it, I think, is just reassuring people that we're going to do the things that we should be doing. Unfortunately, in some places it's not the case, but it sounds like you gave birth in a place with a group and in the hospital that was great.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. Using the latest in breast milk science, ByHeart created a clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula that's made with organic, grass-fed whole milk, certified clean ingredients, and features a patented protein blend that gets closest to breast milk. Their blend includes the most abundant protein found in breast milk, alpha-lac, as well as lactoferrin, the number one protein found in colostrum. In addition to its patented protein blend, their formula includes prebiotics and an 80-20 whey to casein ratio, like in early breast milk, which is tailor-made for a newborn's digestive system and makes it an easy-to-digest formula. Curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code Dr. Nicole for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. So what was your labor and birth like?
As we came towards the end of my pregnancy. My blood pressure had always been something they were keeping an eye on. Mm-hmm. Before pregnancy, I was someone who kind of lived in the 140s over 90s.
Okay.
But was never medicated. And so I was sort of labeled as gestational hypertension because that those blood pressures sort of stuck through the beginning of my pregnancy.
Gotcha.
They actually got a little better just by being pregnant.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I got, you know, relatively hypotensive. But yeah, but as we got in the later weeks, it started to creep back up. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing weekly... is it BPPs or the...
Yep.
Yeah. And so then we had started to talk about induction pretty much as soon as I had the diagnosis of gestational hypertension and with my age as well.
Right.
And so they talked to me about sort of the timeline of when to do it, the risks of potentially waiting past 40 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely a pretty... risk averse person.
Okay.
And I had had, unfortunately, a few pretty close family friends who had had late term stillbirths.
Oh my God.
It's unfortunate.
Okay. And, yeah.
But that definitely, I think, impacted my my decisions about induction.
Right.
And so I was totally on board for being induced at 39 weeks.
Gotcha.
So I came into the hospital, 39 plus one, and they checked me in, and I essentially was starting from complete ground zero.
Okay.
Not at all ripe, you know, cervix, not at all favorable.
Yep.
so they checked me and decided to, start with a dose of the oral,
Cytotec,
so they gave me one dose of that. Didn't even try the Foley catheter right away just because it was so
if you were close unripe. I probably couldn't have put it
yeah
in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let that simmer for about 6 hours, and then when they checked me again, I'd started to ripen a little enough that they thought they could put the catheter in.
Okay.
Foley catheter. Yeah, about 6 hours in of that first night, I got a second dose of oral misoprostol, and then they put the Foley catheter in.
Okay. Was that painful?
It was pretty painful. Yeah. and so they did that at about midnight. And so consequently, that first night was pretty horrendous in terms of discomfort. And it was just, it was pain, but it was also... nausea, and just GI upset. I felt like I was running to the bathroom, you know, every 15 minutes.
Gotcha.
And because of that discomfort, my blood pressure shot way up, you know, to 200 over 110. So there was an hour or two there where they were, you know, they were treating me for, you know, concerning for preeclampsia.
Right.
So I got a couple doses of I think it was nifedipine.
Okay.
But something for my blood pressure. And that helped a little bit. What really helped was actually getting a dose of fentanyl.
Okay.
And controlling my pain. And that then my blood pressure was totally normal.
Okay.
That was... I didn't love that, the fentanyl. it made me feel totally high. You know, allowed me to get some sleep, especially because that day we weren't going to be able to do the epidural until the anesthesiologist got in that morning.
Right.
They could have called him in, but you know, I was okay with, with waiting.
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, so consequently that the first night had its rough spots in terms of the blood pressure and the discomfort. The opiates. But then I guess first morning was able to get an epidural. And it was great. I felt like I felt like a good epidural. I know there's, you know, there can be good epidurals and bad epidurals.
Right.
I was able to, move around in bed. I couldn't get up out of bed. But I could at least, you know, power myself around around the bed, turnover. Gotcha. And but my pain control was still great.
Gotcha. And did you still have the catheter in at that point, the balloon in?
Oh, that's, yeah. So at that point, I did. I want to say it fell out slash they pulled it out at the check where I got to about 3 to 4 centimeters.
Okay. Okay.
So I think it was probably in about a total of 12 hours.
Okay.
Would be my guess. Yeah.
So it wasn't like they said you have to be a certain number of centimeters or anything before you got the epidural. It was just like when you wanted it, you got it.
Correct. Yeah.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then consequently the next, I guess if that was Wednesday morning. So the next, 36 hours really till Thursday night, I was actually pretty comfortable. I was just sort of coasting.
Right.
You know, very slowly dilating.
Let's talk through that. Because yeah, I'm doing the math in my head now. I was like, wait a minute. You were already 3 to 4 centimeters dilated. And then how long, what happened in that
Yeah. So then that was, so I think it was about 3 to 4, you know, Wednesday morning. Uh-huh. And then by the time they checked me again Wednesday afternoon, so I'd had the epidural, you know, for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. I was still at like 4.
Okay.
And
they were probably doing Pitocin, I'm guessing, at that point.
Oh, yeah. We had started Pitocin pretty much when we started the epidural.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so because I hadn't really dilated much more, mm-hmm. we decided to break my water.
Okay.
So that would have been, yeah, like Wednesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that went fine. You know, because of the epidural, it was not uncomfortable. Stellan did, when he came out, he definitely had a little nick on his scalp.
Oh, from where they
looked like the little, yeah, uh-huh. little crochet hook, uh-huh. which I mean was fine. You know, he healed fine, but, so that happened, Wednesday afternoon, and then, just kept trucking through Wednesday night. I don't really think they checked me that much more, until the next morning.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause I wasn't feeling any urge to push at that point.
Sure. Sure.
And so I, you know, assumed there wasn't really much to check for
mm-hmm.
overnight. So I just, essentially could rest and,
okay.
And,
were you able to get some rest?
I was for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then my husband was there and my mom was also there. And so they were kind of swapping.
Gotcha.
So that they were allowed to, or they had the ability to also go home and rest.
Gotcha.
Which was nice.
Gotcha. And were you being cared for by a physician or midwives in the hospital?
Both. Essentially. Yeah. Whoever was on call for that time.
Oh, so they just really just. Whoever
yeah,
was there.
It was really just a team team effort.
Okay.
Yeah. So I ended up seeing mostly everyone.
Gotcha. I was going to say, how'd you like your nurses?
Oh my gosh. My nurses were amazing. there was one who, like, she made it her goal to have me move as much as I could.
Right.
And so we were doing all sorts of exercises, like on my knees, with sheets, trying to, you know, uh-huh. shake the baby, not uh-huh. shake the baby, but you know,
but yeah, get the
shake
baby
the belly
in a good
to
position.
Get the baby moving. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So yeah, they were totally awesome.
Nice. Good. So then you got to, went Thursday morning by then?
Yeah. So I got to Thursday morning. Uh-huh. And by then, I like really had not dilated anymore. Well, you know, we had a couple people checking. So there was, you know, that measurement standard of error. But I was pretty solidly like 5 or 6 and not more than that.
Okay.
And so then they decided to
was your headspace? Like, where were you mentally then?
Yeah, I was still fine because I was so comfortable.
Okay.
I did know, I guess at that point that we were going to start backing up against, the amount of time my water had been broken,
mm-hmm.
but the team wasn't really stressing about that yet. And so I wasn't stressing about it. I was definitely a little frustrated that my body wasn't responding to the Pitocin mm-hmm. and everything else that we were mm-hmm. trying. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, we did a Pitocin holiday.
Okay. Yep. We do that sometimes, a little break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it was off for what would make sense, maybe 2 to 4 hours or
yeah.
so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Thursday morning, I had that break, and then they restarted it, you know, back at the low dose, mm-hmm. Kind of Thursday midday.
Okay.
And so, but pretty quickly got back up to the max dose.
Okay.
Just because it was, you know, I was tolerating it. And this entire time, Stellan was tolerating everything fine.
Okay.
Like, he's never
like, I'm
had
good. Right.
concerning. Yeah. Right. Nothing concerning. So that was also reassuring for me this entire time.
Right.
Was that
right.
his patterns always look great. So finally, Thursday evening, by that point, you know, my water had been broken more than 24 mm-hmm. hours. And so they started to talk to me about, you know, risks of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm remembering what they told me correctly, you know, the data would start to talk about risks at 24 hours, but getting towards, you know, 28, 30, it was okay to mm-hmm. them.
Yep.
But again, with, you know, every hour is a little more risk. In terms of infection. And so, but I had started to kind of start to move in terms of my dilation.
Okay.
So I was starting to get, you know, consistently 7-8 centimeter okay. checks.
Okay.
And yeah, so then Thursday evening, then we had that talk of, you know, if you don't dilate more
mm-hmm.
and we're getting close to 28 hours water broken,
mm-hmm.
We'll have to start thinking about doing a C-section.
Okay.
And so the first time we talked about that, I was pretty upset.
Okay.
And I lost it and I was crying. And,
okay.
Just because it wasn't so much that I'd be upset that I had to have a C-section,
mm-hmm.
But just that I'd, you know, been there so long
sure.
working towards a vaginal
yes.
birth and then to,
yeah.
Yeah. you know, to then have to have a C-section.
Right. Right. Right.
So that's where the MD who was on call at that point
uh-huh.
And who delivered me eventually, she was awesome because she said, you know, we can give you another 2 hours.
Right.
I'm comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll check you then. You're at 8 centimeters now. You know, if you haven't moved at all in those next 2 hours, like, we really should do a C-section.
Okay.
And so then after that, I felt like things really quickly progressed.
Okay.
So like half an hour later, I was asking my nurse, I was like, I really feel
something.
Even through this epidural, I'm feeling an urge.
Right.
Like, I need to be moving.
Right.
Like, I
right.
feel like I need to push.
Right.
I don't know necessarily what that's supposed to feel like as
right.
a first time mom,
right.
but I think this is
something
what
is I'm happening.
Feeling.
Yes.
yeah. So they did check me about an hour after that conversation. And
uh-huh.
I was at like 9.5,
okay.
you know, completely effaced. She said there was just like a teeny little lip,
uh-huh.
You know, that was still there. And she's like, we can push through that if you want.
Okay.
You know, there are risks. I think she told me that, yeah, that there would be, you know, a risk of some injury to the cervix if,
by
trying to push through that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But that if I wanted to, that we could. And so
mm-hmm.
I felt the urge to push and. Yeah, I was ready to
okay.
do that.
All right.
Yeah, so then, but then I pushed for 2 hours. So.
Were you feeling better at that point? Like,
yes.
It's like a little bit of an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
Like, literally just
yeah.
an hour before, you were like, you know, said you
might
were
have a C-section.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I'm back in the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So then I definitely felt a huge relief. And
uh-huh.
I definitely had people tell me pushing actually does feel better
uh-huh.
than the stages right before that. And
right.
I agree with that to an extent.
Okay.
Yeah. So we were changing positions. I tried being on my hands and knees
mm-hmm.
sometimes. I tried being on my side.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just stubborn. And I think I was getting tired. So it took 2 hours.
And 2 hours 2 hours is not bad at all for a first time baby. Like that's for a first time. It really is not. So, I mean, I can say that because I actually haven't pushed a baby since I had 2 C-sections. But in the grand scheme of things, I know it can feel like a long time, but I hope you're not like, oh my God, it took me 2 hours.
It actually didn't feel like that long until, you know, the end where I just felt like I was getting fatigued. And at one point, the doctor was, she's like, okay, I think you're pushing with your face. You need to take all that energy and, you know, put it down.
Right.
Down there and push from there. So that actually, that advice helped. But yeah, so eventually, you know, he came out. I did have, and we did immediate skin to skin.
How much did he weigh?
He weighed 7 pounds, 1 ounce.
Okay, that's a perfect size.
Yeah, it was a very good size. My husband cut the cord, which was kind of fun.
Because
he's sort of he's a little bit of a squeamish guy. But we both wanted him to, and he enjoyed doing that.
Nice.
And then I ended up having a third degree perineal tear.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
That was some recovery.
Maybe was is like.
I do feel, you know, 5 months now later, pretty much completely healed.
Okay.
Yeah. So the way she described it, it was like barely a third degree.
Okay.
So it, you know, barely went into the anal sphincter, but definitely required repair. And so, yeah, for sure the first few weeks, were pretty rough.
Okay. Painful.
I was taking, you know, all sorts of stool softeners.
Right.
I didn't use toilet paper for like 7 weeks.
Because it was just like, I can't do it. Yeah,
the Perry bottle.
It was
my friend.
Yeah.
It brought that everywhere. So, I think she did a great repair. And then I actually requested to be referred to pelvic floor PT.
Aren't you smart?
Immediately. Yeah. So that definitely helped. And I'd say overall, I do feel like it's pretty much, back to normal. I haven't had issues with any sort of incontinence.
Awesome. How long do you feel like it took you to get back to where you felt more normal?
Yeah, I'd say, probably 8 to 10 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So in the grand scheme of things, not that long.
Gotcha. And how often did you see the pelvic physical therapist?
So I saw, let's see, I think I saw her first at like 4 weeks postpartum.
Okay.
I don't think I would have felt comfortable or like just felt, it would not have been comfortable to try to do it before. And I saw her once a week for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then it was honestly just her schedule and my schedule. I could have gone more.
Sure.
But just the timing didn't work out.
Okay. And you were starting to feel better about things.
Yeah.
And so what about the postpartum care from the OB side? I feel like we do such a horrible job, but maybe.
Yeah. I mean, in the hospital was great. I mean, so we were there for, I guess, 3 days. Mostly for my blood pressure. Then he had a little bit of elevated bilirubin.
Okay.
Never needed any lights or anything else than just time and eating and pooping.
Sure.
And then I ended up seeing, I guess I requested to be seen at like 2 weeks postpartum.
Okay.
Because I just had my usual 6 week check and I was like, I pretty much had a surgical repair of my perineum.
Someone should look at this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they were very accommodating. You know, they didn't fight back on that at all. So,
right. But you had to ask for it.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then similarly to the prenatal care, I essentially just saw whoever was available, which is fine. Again, because I had seen them all in the hospital.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't want to see you back sooner for like a blood pressure check or anything. No?
That they did, actually. Okay. I did get seen at 1 week to check my blood pressure. Okay. And I was actually discharged on nifedipine.
Okay.
Because I was still in like, you know, 150 over high 90s.
Gotcha.
When I discharged. So I took nifedipine for 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then was able to come off it pretty easily.
Gotcha. Back in the day when my girls were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones, but you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated in the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that there's no third-party ads, no unwanted eyes. Now, let me share some of the great features that make the Family Album app a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature about the Family Album app is you can order 8 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by ads when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you are still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. And then how was breastfeeding?
Yeah, it was tough. Mm-hmm. So,
labor of love, as I always call it.
So true, yeah. And he, I think for many reasons, his latch was not great to begin with. Mm-hmm. We ended up seeing, so I saw a lactation consultant pretty much like day of life 5, which okay. was awesome. And she was wonderful.
Nice.
So yeah, so we saw her and then we were referred to essentially a physical therapist for his kind of for oral facial therapy for him. Just because he had a, you know, he had a kind of a squished little face and a tight latch. And so so they definitely helped with that. He did end up having a tongue tie clipped.
Okay.
At about, I guess he was about 10 weeks old.
Okay.
Which I think helped. Honestly, I think the thing that helped the most for him was just growing and age and time and practice.
Gotcha.
But I essentially ended up exclusive pumping for the first couple weeks.
Okay.
Which was not how I envisioned it, but I think it actually in the end worked out the best because my husband could help with feeding him.
Right.
It established a really good supply for me. I even had like a little bit of an oversupply because of pumping so much in the beginning.
Okay.
But that meant that when his latch, it kind of helped with his latch because of the oversupply and the fast letdown and that kind of thing. I think it helped with his breastfeeding.
Gotcha.
It took some work, and it took a lot of pumping in the beginning. But we're still breastfeeding now and still going well.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask, if you're still breastfeeding.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Breastfeeding is obviously you do it, but like, it's hard to explain how much your world revolves around it for a long time.
Yeah.
Because you can't, like, going out to eat, go to the store, when do I pump? When is the next time?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, it's
and
a lot.
Pumping is no easier. I mean, respect to the moms who exclusively pump, for months. It's just, your whole world revolves around when can I next pump? It's really
do
tough.
You use the ones that you can just stick in there and like
so I did
the hands-free ones
I have a Willow or Willows so my main pump is a Spectra, which is great. But then I did also get a pair of Willows, which TRICARE actually helped pay for, which was awesome.
Oh nice.
And so I use those on like my OR days,
okay,
or like really busy clinic days.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I have the liberty to be able to block out time in clinic, so I don't have to use the wearable ones.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't feel like they're quite as efficient as the, you know, the plug-in ones. But
yeah.
I do use them.
Okay. Okay. All right. And then, oh, how long was your maternity leave? Like, how long is a military maternity leave?
Yeah. So the military, I think, is actually pretty awesome at their military or their parental leave mm-hmm. policies. So I got 3 months of paid leave.
Oh, nice.
They're actually starting, I think, January 1 of 23, it's going to be 4 months. And for fathers, I know it's 6 weeks now, and I think it might also be going to 3 or 4 months for,
okay.
For, you know, for the non-birthing right. parents as well.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I took three. I think I might've been able to take four, but,
okay.
But yeah, it was nice.
Good. Good. So how has the postpartum experience been like overall, and how do you feel about your birth experience?
Yeah, so the immediate postpartum period was definitely tough. Mm-hmm. I had to take my oral boards for orthopedic surgery at essentially 5 weeks postpartum.
y'all should see my face right now. Oh my God, that is torture.
It is, and I probably could have asked for some kind of accommodations,
right.
But I think the answer may have been, oh, you can take them next year.
Yeah. And but, it's like, you know, I'm going to suck it up and just do it.
Yeah. You know, you spend a year collecting cases. And
yes.
So
yes.
Yeah. In my mind, the only option was to do it then.
Oh, do you have to travel to?
Yeah, you do.
Okay. Ours are in Dallas in Texas.
Ours are in Chicago.
Okay.
So everyone goes to Chicago. So I went, by myself. Stellan stayed with, my husband and then his parents were here
okay.
too.
Okay.
So that in of itself was actually okay.
Uh-huh.
That travel, I felt okay being away from him at that point. I was pumping, but the first 5 weeks of my maternity leave were just horrendous in terms of, you know, I was trying to study.
Oh my God.
And then I definitely was not prepared for just the emotions that come with that immediate postpartum period.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I'm definitely a very optimistic, glass half full person.
Mm-hmm.
I felt lucky to never have had to deal with any sort of depression or anxiety. And
sure.
So just the negative emotions, that can come in those first few weeks were rough.
Right. I can imagine.
But yeah, I think getting boards done, also just with time, you know, the second 6 weeks of my maternity leave were relatively great.
Okay.
And so I definitely dealt with, you know, the baby blues for
mm-hmm.
the first couple of weeks, but mm-hmm. it did resolve, I'd say, probably by about 4 weeks.
Okay. Okay. God, I couldn't imagine having to take my oral boards right after I had a baby. Well, I'm glad. Well, I assume you passed and got it done.
I did.
And yes. Because then that would be like torturous to have to do it all over again.
To do it again.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. All right. So as we wrap up, what is your one favorite thing or piece of advice that you would give to expectant moms or expectant families?
I think it would be surrounding that postpartum period.
Mm-hmm.
And just, especially for first-time moms mm-hmm. and families, giving yourself that grace of allowing yourself to feel emotions in those first few weeks and even months, and, you mm-hmm. know, let yourself cry, you know, talk it out with your partner and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, you know, if you have the ability to have help from family or friends in those first few weeks, definitely, definitely take it. My mom was here, then my sister came up, in the first few days after he was born. And so just to have, you know, someone who can cook all your meals for you,
yes.
walk the dog, do your laundry, it is so, so helpful.
Yeah.
And even if you don't, you know, have family that can literally stay, taking advantage of friends who want to help
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even the little things, they ask what they can do, you know, make me a lasagna. or come walk my dog.
Yes.
You know, they'll be happy to do it. And it's one item off your checklist and something you don't have to think about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So definitely, you know, taking advantage of that help in the first few weeks and just being prepared to have those ups and downs of emotions.
For sure. For sure. For sure. All right. Well, where can women find you? Are you on social media or anything? You can say nowhere.
Yeah, I am. So I'm on Instagram. And my handle is just CC Ski. So CCSKI.
Okay.
And then I'm also on Facebook.
Awesome.
Claudia Thomas.
Okay. Yeah. Do you ski? I presume?
I do. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then my maiden name was also Skeeler, so that went into
Handle. It fit. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to share your story. I know folks are going to find it helpful. I'm already thinking of the things that I want to talk about afterwards in my Dr. Nicole's notes. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
Wasn't that a great episode? So many things to learn from in her birth story. And you know, after I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways from the conversation. And here are my Dr. Nicole's notes from my conversation with Claudia. Number one, I really love how one of the doctors in her practice asked her if she had a birth plan or birth wishes. This is really how it should be done. We should be initiating that conversation. However, if that is not happening, and to be honest, that is not very common that that happens, then you absolutely should bring up the conversation if you have a birth plan or birth wishes. I have a class on making a birth plan the right way. You can definitely check that out. I offer it periodically throughout the year. Just head to my website, drnicolerankins.com, and you can check and see when the next class will be offered. Number two, induction can be a lengthy process, okay? Her induction was Tuesday to Thursday, 52 hours total, she said, and you just have to be patient with the process. You really need doctors who are going to be patient with the process. So be prepared that labor induction can take some time. Now, most often it will result in a vaginal birth, but you just, again, have to be patient with the process. And keep in mind, even from Tuesday to Thursday morning, like she was 5 centimeters on Thursday morning. So you just, again, have to be patient. You have to know when labor is considered active, when we should, when we shouldn't stop. These are all things that I cover in detail inside the birth preparation course. So you can, again, definitely check that out, drnicolerankins.com/enroll. Okay. Number three is remember that the anesthesiologist may not be in the hospital. Okay. She talked about how there wasn't an anesthesiologist in the hospital, and that is not uncommon that the anesthesiologist may have to be called in during the night for an epidural. So for that reason, you really want to know all of your options for pain management, because you may have to wait a little bit before the anesthesiologist can come in. Or the anesthesiologist may be doing surgical cases. Epidurals are considered elective. They're not considered something that you have to have. It's more, I don't want to say it's a luxury, but it's something that isn't required for birth. So things that are more urgent are going to take precedence. Like, for example, if someone's in surgery for something. So you want to know all of your options for pain management. You can learn all your options. I have a free guide you can download at drnicolerankins.com/pain. Or episode, I believe it's 129 of the podcast, also covers all of your options for managing pain in labor. But that guide is great because it lays it all out, the risk, benefits, pros, cons. Actually, the episode is great too, but the guide lets you kind of see it in a visual format. So definitely check that out. And one final plug for the birth preparation course, I cover all of the options for managing pain and labor in even greater detail, lots of visuals and things that focus on tips for managing labor without pain medication. So you can get more details there. Again, the birth preparation course is drnicolerankins.com/enroll. All right. So there you have it. Do me a solid. Share this podcast with a friend. Sharing is caring. I would love to reach and serve more people, and I'd appreciate your help in doing that. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. So wherever you're listening to me right now, hit that subscribe button so you always get these episodes automatically downloaded into your podcast feed. And shoot me a note on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. Let me know what you think about the show. Follow me there for more information about pregnancy and birth. I love to connect with folks outside of the podcast, and Instagram is my favorite place to do so. So hit me up there, Dr. Nicole Rankins. So that is it for this episode. Do come on back next week, and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health, or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.